here's what's happening, is that the phone server that I have, I guess it just doesn't have reception. It doesn't pick up in the right way. So for the class in the future, here, I'll just borrow another phone. Because I really do like to become, I really like to be steady in these things, and I think the success of our program, that the sense that it's going on for 5 years, and we still have quite a regular audience, is that, I try to always keep the program. In fact, today there was a concert up here, Shamdas and Kripalu. He was just here, but I consider this my priorities. I had to go around the neighborhood now looking for a phone, and I got that phone. So let me just begin with something here. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Daksulan Militam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namaha. Okay, good. I was going to cut this short anyway, in one sense. It was a really busy weekend, but very, very wonderful. Among, I remember all the things that went on, but on Saturday they had a 6-hour kirtan at the Broome Street Temple. That's such a wonderful, wonderful place, and the quality of the kirtan was really just superb. So, you know, that didn't end till late at night, and by the time I got back, I stayed in Jersey. It was well past midnight, but it was worth it. I mean, you can make a sacrifice for kirtan because it's the most powerful activity, as said by Jiva Goswami. Devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. And then he goes on to quote that to be meek and humble is natural in Kali Yuga because our abilities lack power in every way. I mean, relatively, we may think we have intelligence or strength, whatever it is, but compared to other ages. So humility is natural, and humility allows you to experience mercy. And the experience of mercy allows you to feel love in your heart. And love in one's heart is what makes the chanting of the holy name relishable. And therefore, one with humility can chant all the time. Because love is pleasurable. No one wants that to stop. You're not doing it for anything else. So, a kirtan was there. But then, the next day, I had a 6-hour bhakti course. I think this was kind of a precedent in one sense. A bhakti course for people who are not bhaktis. People who are studying bhakti and they're studying yoga. They have these teacher trainings. And as you know, I'm affiliated with Yoga Maya. And the yoga studio, and they had a bhakti teacher training. That's what I'm going to talk about today, but it was from 1 to 4 and 6 to 9. So again, by the time you get out of there, it was real late. And then the next morning, I went to Vrajadham with Kirti and Raji Raja. Some of you may know they live in Allentown, and another 50 minutes is Vrajadham. Now, I heard of this place, but I kind of never saw it. So I went there, and it was wonderful, actually. It was wonderful. And in many respects, it doesn't have the farming aspect that Prabhupada wanted in his visionary, and he wanted, a place where people actually live. The only people who live there are the pujaris and the kirtaniers. But the facilities for guests, it was really wonderful. When I drove in with Kirti and Rajaraja and Saraswati Priya, who I met in India, come to America. She was in India studying. When I went in there and I we came in front of the temple, I looked right into the forest. I saw Govardhan Hill. They actually made a replica of Govardhan Hill, and it's so authentic. It's made of stones that are just, that they're from the property there, but it looks exactly like the stones on Govardhan Hill. And they're, piled up in a very, very similar way. And even though I guess the Govardhan Hill is about 25 yards, with a Parikram pass, it was really, it was so authentic. I mean, sitting there, you can suspend your suspended animation that you're in Govardhan. So we did ecstatic kirtan, and then we went into the temple, and we had darshan of Nakji. We had darshan of Nakji, and Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. And what I liked about the project is it was very, very practically constructed. I think sometimes we have some kind of thought that if we make things ornate, people will come. Rather, we make things accommodating, people will come. Accommodation should be much more priority than ornamentation. In the presentation of Krishna consciousness. So it was very practically situated, built. And we took a darshan, and they had classical Vaishnav musicians. I mean, really good singers. So, we sat there, we took darshan. It was, it was all Indians, except for our little group there. And then we went down to take prasada, and that also they had the cooks from Natwar in India, so it was delicious prasada, and two sabjis and a dal and rice and puris and some savory and some mango, it was very practical too. They had a nice hall. They had about 50-60 tables with chairs and you just go in, you go on a line, and, there's nice Vaishnavas serving the prasadam. And then in the back of the temple, there was a beautiful man-made lake with the deity of Jamunaji, which is more prominent, I think, to the Vallabhas than the Sri Radha. And we went around Govardhan again. And then came back in New York, and last night, wonderful kirtan with Gauravani, Ananta Chuta, and Janavi, and then just the jamming, whatever you call it, together in the purity of the chanting, and that went on to midnight, so I didn't get to bed till 2 and then left to come upstate at 6. So I thought this would not happen, but it somehow happened. Well, let me tell you about that bhakti course. I told the students that I struggled. That's how I began. And I think one thing about public speaking is You have to connect to the audience, and that has to be your sincerity. I struggled. This course, I had 6 hours. I did not know the frame of reference of my audience. You know, and you can prepare all you want. But again, it's not as important that truth is spoken as that truth is understood. And it's understood through a frame of reference. Unless you know the frame of reference, it's hard to speak, because people may not have components of experience and knowledge to understand what you're speaking. And therefore, I told him I struggled. And I asked him, is that struggle I went through bhakti? And the answer is, well, it depends. If I was struggling because I was nervous, I wouldn't make a good impression for myself so that people would like me or have an economic motive, or even some people could speak and do kirtan with a sexual motive because of the audiences, women, whatever it is. It depends. Did I do it for me, or I did it because it's my service? And when you offer something, you want to do it properly, because it's love. When love is the motivator to make things beautiful, hopefully my motive was I wanted to make it beautiful. And what's beautiful of a speech when Krishna is understood? Now, knowing that the students may not even be theistic, and if you really want to spend bhakti, and you can say, hey, look, this is a religion. It worships God. What if they have that prejudice I was thinking? Bhurijan always tells the story when he first hitchhiked to come to the temple, you know, in 22nd Avenue, you know, and then he liked it, but he thought, my God, I was, you know, I wanted to practice yoga, and I found the religion. So what I told the students I was going to do is I had a list of subjects that I was going to discuss. I was going to be very open for questions and answers, because in teacher-student communication, the questions of the students indicate the frame of reference that they have, which enables the teacher to instruct in a way to build a frame of reference that's sufficient for him to communicate the subjects that he wants them to understand. So I had a whole list of subjects. And then I said, in between each subject, I'm going to leave time for questions, and I'm also going to discuss and describe the life of one devotee. And I described how understanding things from different angles is one thing to hone your understanding. And I said, Bhagavad Gita says that too, you know, like with the axe of knowledge. How do you sharpen something? You hit it from different sides. So I thought one way to explain bhakti to them is to hit it from different sides. To hit it from different sides. So sure enough, I explained that the first subject is why self-realization. I described the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, because If Bhagavad Gita is a bhakti book, well, let's see how they begin it. And it begins with the basic understanding of self-realization, is that you have to come to a point where you understand happiness, ultimate happiness, cannot come through prakriti or matter, because it's temporary, it's superficial, and it's full of suffering. So even if you can extract pleasure from it, that pleasure absorbs you in matter that makes you feel more acutely the pain and suffering that comes from the transformation of that matter. And I always like to say this, what to speak of the illusion of non-existence called death. I explain classic yoga. What is ignorance? It's the root cause of all suffering. But what is that ignorance? When you misidentify that which is pure, eternal, and blissful, which is the soul, with that which is impure, temporary, and full of suffering, which is the body. And you have to come to that platform. And that platform makes you, let me see if there's something that is transcendent to Prakriti. Let me see if I can find or experience the soul and make it my goal to, for yoga, which is to link with that soul. And I described how the process of worshiping God, especially through mantra, is, I said there's many ways to ascertain if something is correct or not. And one of the states of mind is correct knowledge. One is incorrect knowledge. One is memory. One is sleep. One is imagination. Those are the five states that the mind can be in. One of those five states at all times. But one is pramana. You have the correct understanding. And how do you get the correct understanding? You get the correct understanding through either direct perception, inference, or agama, or verbal testimony. And I explained in the tradition of India, to hear from authorities who know and are accepted is considered the highest form of understanding. I didn't go into why. And then I described how the Yoga Sutras present Ishvara Pranidhan, worshiping God, surrendering to God, as basically the best option in the process of meditation. I described that quite elaborately and explained how Bhagavad Gita also promotes that. In the first six chapters, when the various yogas are discussed, it says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena karatmanam shradavam bhajate yomam sumeyukdama. Of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. And why is it the highest? Because yoga works on the platform of meditation, the chosen object of your meditation. When that meditation is the divine in the form of mantra, which signifies or is not different than the divine, then the soul, the meditator, he gravitates towards the object of meditation out of a natural attraction or relationship, rather than an understanding that this is right. You can meditate on something in one of two ways. From an attraction platform of I like the object, or I should think of the object. Bhakti is I like the object. The natural attraction. And the object of meditation is not just a prop. It is the divine. And I read quotes from commentaries on the Yoga Sutras which talk about the efficacy of mercy. Now, when you meditate on an object which is the divine and it's bhakti, so relationship means reciprocation. And what's that reciprocation from the divine? The reciprocation from the divine. The reciprocation from the divine is to fulfill your desire to realize the divine, and therefore what becomes difficult, it becomes easy by the yogi's longing. Because The object of your meditation, which is Ishvara, which is Krishna, reciprocates. I will remove the obstacles to the realization of the self. So I described that, and then I picked one bhakti story. So I discussed this lady Gauri, who the way she died, and it was an incredible story. She died in full consciousness, even and she knew she was going to live. The Ayurveda doctor said you had an hour left to live. We watched the person who was fully conscious, knowing that they had an hour left to live, but having full faith in Guru and Krishna. I explained the story, but then a question came. And, per person said, well, I'm in the world, and, she was a renunciate. So I got the feedback. I saw, that's their frame of reference. I said to the people there, this is a good example. I spoke what I thought was truth, but it wasn't understood as truth. It wasn't understood as relevant for everyone. So in that way, and I saw I was able to build up the frame of reference of the audience. And then after a while, because, you can't avoid explaining that there's God, my approach when I speak is naturally a frame of reference to the audience, and it's kind of an intellectual approach in a way. I try to speak reasonably, convincingly, and it establishes my authority. And then if people want to inquire further, I can explain the more theistic conceptions that I hold. But it was really an amazing thing, because there was two sessions of 3 hours. The first was the philosophy, and the second was practice. But at the end of the thing in the philosophy, I was just speaking, just in parampara. And I just saw that somehow faith is the precursor of knowledge. From the intellectual discussion we had and clearing up the different doubts, they were very receptive. And I felt that energy. Communication is not just an intellectual thing. In the bhakti process, is a certain energy. It's a certain thing that flows through you. Devotion. So it's very, very beautiful. And then I was able to explain the difference between personalism and impersonalism, which is foundational for bhakti. If you have the wrong conception, you can't understand bhakti. Bhakti is for others. If you think everything is one, where's the question of bhakti? How can you have love? I mean, love is an energy that flows from subject to object. If there's no object, if there's only subject, where is the question of love? So I explained that. Then I explained what is bhakti. And I thought about this very, very deeply. And there's three basic conceptions that you have to reconcile. Bhakti as the nature of the soul. Bhakti as a practice that reveals the nature of the soul. And bhakti as an energy that descends from God to his pleasure that comes through the soul. So I explain, basically, according to Jiva Dharma, which is a very wonderful book, the first chapter, that really bhakti, it begins as a disposition of the soul to serve something greater than itself. Now, that disposition is the dharma, or function of the soul. And duty is based on your function. Your duty is based on what you are made to do. So, I explained the concept of dharma, the essence of the soul. And what bhakti is, in one sense, is bringing out that nature, when that nature manifests. In one sense, when that nature manifests, that's bhakti. And bhakti is also the practice of acting as the soul, the practice of acting as a servant of God. And which means anyabhilashita shunya, not doing it with any motive. Krishna anisha anu, trying to please God. It's a kind of a practice. And the practice parodies, is it? The practice parodies the nature. And the example Prabhupada gave was very perfect. As a child walking. The walking capacity is in the child. It's just not manifest. But trying to walk brings out that capacity. So our capacity to serve is there. And by trying to serve, it brings out the nature of the soul. And that trying to serve, which is acts of devotion, what really happens is it focuses you on the object of devotion. And what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is very, very interesting. He said there's a vastu shakti, that every substance has an energy. Every substance has an energy. And the objects of devotion, they have an energy of bhakti. So when you focus on them, it brings out your love. And that's there in any relationship. You know, if you have a loving relationship with your mother, if by acts of devotion to your mother, you begin to think of your mother, and it has a potency to bring out your love for your mother. So it's like that. Acts of devotion bring out thoughts of the object of your devotion. And that's how it works, like a spark in a fire. Where like a spark, it has potential for fire, but it's not very potent. When the spark is reunited with the fire, its potency manifests. That potency is bhakti. Or another way to look at it is when that disposition to serve, which is the nature of the soul, becomes pure, then it can be accommodating to the energy of bhakti, which is the samvit ladini shakti. It is the samvit ladini vritti of the chit shakti, of the internal vote. And then that comes through your heart. So that's bhakti. And what that did is that allowed me then to describe traditionally what are the different practices to do that. And the basic practices are the 64 items, and then 9 items, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, which I explained, then Panchanga Bhakti, and of the 5 items, hearing, chanting, and remembering, and of them, Kirtan is the best. Kirtan is the best, because it's the most absorbing. And then I discuss different items, like the worship of the deity, the worship of the deity, the worship of the deity, explain something practically about that, also the concept of your nature being on the periphery, not in the center, and how acts of devotion move you to the periphery where you can experience love, and that's the purpose of deity worship. It purifies all the things that will put you in the center, like wealth will put you in the center. It purifies that by giving it to God. It's a very practical thing. I discuss surrender. How you can't really have bhakti with an independent mind. That's not love. It's not only love, it's against our nature. It's as if the hand tried to serve separate from the body. So there's an element of in spiritual life of surrendering to the universal desire. The desire of God, which is inclusive of the will and happiness of everyone. And so that was the first section. And when it ended, then I also explained that bhakti also has to be practical in the world. You have to live bhakti. And how do you live bhakti? I described the six items of Bhute Bhojyate Chaiva. The Dati Gritatina Guyamat. Giving gifts, accepting gifts, Guyamat Yachi Prichiti, inquiring confidence. Inquiring in confidence and explaining in confidence, giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasad, accepting prasad. And then a very wonderful thing is Kaliya Krishna, a very wonderful Vaishnava in New York. Can't say enough how nice he is. He brought enough donuts from the donut plant, which is right around the corner. He brought enough of them to distribute his prasadam. So all they came up, all these very nice, respectable people came up, and he's got these donuts, and they were so good. I mean, they're so good. And that in exchange, and they picked up what is bhakti, because when they came, then we had a two-hour break, they brought me back tea. They brought me back a banana. You know, it was an exchange. Then the second half of the session, which was very, very interesting, the second half, we just concentrated on kirtan, and I did prayerful reading. I described to them how important it is to associate with sadhus, and they come in the form of their books. I taught them this prayerful reading. They did some free writing, and they were discussing among themselves, based on reading Beyond Birth and Death by Srila Prabhupada. So it was so nice. You know, to read, they were reading Prabhupada's potent words. And I picked out sections that I thought they would have frame of reference to understand. That was so nice. They were discussing among themselves. It's so nice people discuss philosophy. And then Lakshmi Nisringa and his wife were there. They led incredible kirtan, and they spoke about kirtan. And then Raghunath came to the second session. He asked the owner if he could attend. So he came to the second session. And that was, you know, so I said, hey, Raghunath, you have a half hour. We have 3 hours. And he spoke very nicely. He spoke out yoga, you know, we take care of the physical body and then our minds. He said, but there's other subtle coverings called the ego. And he described how great yogis were even the biggest demons. And how the kirtan is meant to, the bhakti is meant to really deal with the ego. Bhakti is meant to really deal with the ego. Which I thought was a nice contribution. Bhakti deals with the ego. And then we finished it up with some japa meditation. And I've really broken down at least the foundation of my own bhajan into a particular type of meditation on the holy name in five aspects. And I gave them a guided meditation. I didn't have much time at the end, but they just became completely absorbed in that meditation. And I, you know, it was so beautiful, the experience. And I just thought, wow, this is something nice. You know, we want to share bhakti. Here, people are I'm not charging. They do give me a nice donation for it. But they are paying for this. And if you look at a Sunday feast, I mean, you could look all over North America, but where would 15 people good American boys and girls be sitting for you know, 6 hours. You know, 6 hours. And then this is the kind of letters I got back. Before turning in this evening, I wanted to share something wonderful I took from this evening. Perhaps the best way to explain what I feel right now is, quote, a heart overflowing with love. Today was truly an amazing bhakti experience. Thank you for that and deep gratitude, Amanda. So that was edifying. I'm going to stop now. Are there any questions? Would anyone like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Rajaraja Devadasi.
Thank you for staying on and listening. You know, I wondered how many people would be able to do that. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Kumar.
Kumar, okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Thank you, Gail. How do you like that explanation of bhakti? Do you have any questions about it?
I don't think you would like this question.
I like all your questions. Go ahead.
Explanation of bhakti. Okay, when you asked me about the explanation, your explanation of bhakti, that was kind of like the whole class. So it was like.
Okay.
You know, overwhelming. Right. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Gail. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay, well then for now, thank you. Now that I figured out, it's just my phone here that's so lousy. We shouldn't have any more interruptions. Thank you.